Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food and beverage radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. We are coming to you live from Heritage Radio Network in Brooklyn, New York. We're actually in the studio.
Wow.
For the first time in years. We've been doing the show remotely. I moved out to California, but also, you know, the thing is, it's, you know, COVID really shut us down, and this is really cool. It's crazy being back in the studio. I can't believe all this alcohol is still here.
Right. Like a ghost ship. I came in and the table is still here with the mics all rigged up and the headphones and the liquor cabinet still chock-a-block. I'm pretty sure there's some bottles on top that I placed up there that haven't moved an inch. And it's like, I don't know, It feels good to be home, but it also feels a little strange, like untouched, like haunted.
I mean, yeah. I agree with the ghost ship thing, because I was definitely getting kind of like a Raiders of the Lost Ark vibe coming in here. And I realized that I would be terrible at like excavating ancient tombs, because like immediately I came in and I was like, ooh, this all looks old and cool, and like no one's guarding it. Like no one's gonna notice if I just slip this into my pocket on the way out. No one cares. Yeah. So yeah, don't ever send me on an Indiana Jones expedition, guys. I'd be the guy that took the idol and then got skewered. I'd be the Alfred Molina of that expedition.
Well, the last time you and I were in the studio together, Greg, was March of 2020. The last
March show, 11th, 2020.
The last show we did was with Chaim Dowerman and the team from Up and Up. Mm-hmm. Chaim has now left the field and is working on becoming, he's soon to be a rabbi. So that tells you how like long it's been since you and I've been here.
It's been a while.
Damon hasn't been here since 2019.
Late 2019, yeah. I would have been here in like December of 2019, mm-hmm. I think it was.
And we've been doing the show remotely, and it works out great. I think we're all going to continue. We are going to continue to do absolutely the show remotely. Yeah. Damon's only in town for the weekend. But super glad you're back. Why are you back in town? What have you been doing?
Well, you know, I'm still working in the booze biz. I wanted to come back. My wife had some work stuff to do here, and I, you know, met up with my team at Grand Army and one of my business partners, and, you know, just a lot of catching up and kind of refreshing. But, you know, the thing about New York City is like, you know, while I was telling my wife about this, and it, probably a really terrible analogy, I was like, it's kind of like going back and visiting and seeing an old girlfriend that has moved on without you, and you're kind of jealous, but you gotta be like excited for her, you know? Like, yeah. So like,
at what point in this did Jamie walk away
from? Yeah, exactly. She's like, get the fuck out of here. But what I mean by that is like, you know, like there's been a lot of changes. What sucks about it is a lot of our friends, bars and restaurants and businesses have gone away. Mm-hmm. But there's also some refreshing, you know, new stuff that's around. And, you know, New York, it'll move on without you. Yeah, oh, sure. It doesn't need you. But it's great. And like there's some really magical things that have happened. You know, it was great to see a lot of the old places that are still around. One of them, one of my favorites, Keen's Steakhouse on 36 and 6.
I mean, been there forever.
1884, I believe, or 87.
Yeah. Unique and interesting place. They have the world's largest collection of clay pipes. And you get to learn this when you go there. And they're all, they cover the ceiling of the place, which is humongous. Given where it's at, you'd think, why is this place so
big? There's like four bars in the place.
It's because when it was built, there was nothing there. You know, it's a block away from Macy's, the world's largest department store. And they have all these clay pipes up there. And they have labels on them to who owns them. because back in the day, the clay pipes, you didn't travel with one. You literally just had one everywhere you went. They were too fragile, right? That's the whole point of that.
Right.
Anyway, I'm getting off on that.
But
I love that place too. And I know that you used to have sort of a regimented, you know, like I do Gibbs Sunday over at Bargoto. Mm-hmm. You used to have your thing.
Every Monday, I'd go there for lunch around, you know, 1 o'clock or so, like before I got too busy, and you know, get a spot at the main bar, which is downstairs. It's on the right side of the building. And yeah, I'd have a Gibson and with Boodles gin. That was always still is my call. And then, you know, have a surf and turf and some wine and then go guitar shopping shopping at JJ Hat Center, just a few blocks away. But the thing is, I went there with my wife and we had a reservation and we got into the bar and, you know, there's only a few people sitting at the bar at this point. And I see this guy kind of lean out from his bar stool. He's at the very first bar stool on the far end of the bar. And he kind of just looks at me like, what the hell? It's Dale DeGroff. And you know, I go,
who also doesn't currently live in New York City.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's Manhattan week. Right. And you know, here. So he's sitting there with another author, Philip Green, who wrote the Manhattan book about 10 years ago or so. And yeah, they were just like, they're like, Damon, what the fuck are you doing here? And I'm like, what are you doing here, man? Like, right. And so he bought us a couple of Negronis with his, the DeGroff Aperitivo. And then we had a Manhattan and they invited me to their event on Monday night. And, you know, it was just so great seeing so many friends. And, you know, there was Dell and Philip Green and Amanda Schuster. You know, we love all of them, right? Mm-hmm. And but it was so much fun. We got to hang out at this Manhattan event, and then Amanda and I went and closed down the Ear Inn, which is I think it's like the second oldest bar in New York
another City. Legendary spot.
So yeah, it's just, you know, that's the magic of New York City.
I was about to say before we got on air, but Greg rudely interrupted me and told me to save it for the air.
There was something smart that was about to come out of your mouth. I didn't want to disappear into the ether.
I don't know if it's smart necessarily. It's an observation. I think New York City is one of the few cities in the world that you can go to with a definite plan in mind and you can knock out a bunch of great stuff, or you can come here with no plan and knock out a bunch of great stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are other cities where it's not necessarily that easy. You're going to have to make a plan. And I think that you went to Keene's to show Jamie your old tradition there. And then that led to meeting up with Dale and Philip. And then that led to going to this event and hanging out with Amanda. And
you can just ride the wave.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You catch the wave, ride the wave.
And that's, you know, BQ, who going up and many other cocktail forward things that, you know, he posted something today on the Instagrams. He was like, I ran into this guy 3 times over 3 days and we had no plan for that. Yeah. And it was awesome. You know, like it's
a small town, man. It really is.
It really is at the end of the day. It's like the biggest little town.
It's a tiny town full of friendly people.
Yeah. And like you said before, you mentioned just like being able to go on that ride, you know, like ride that wave. It's kind of like if you let it take you away, it will definitely show you around, you know.
What is this giving you all the feels? Are you going to move back to New York City?
Man, I would. So I gave up my apartment here.
It's a gotcha moment on Speakeasy.
Yeah.
Hard hitting journalism you've come to expect from this show.
Jack Inslee used to have a tiger sound. It was the gotcha tiger.
Yeah, yeah.
So whenever we do a gotcha moment, I'd go, rawr! I would love to have a place here again. But like, you know, I'm trying to, New York is always going to be, you know, I still pay rent here.
Yeah.
But it's for a bar.
Right.
You know, instead of an apartment, which, you know, like I'm never not going to have a toe in the pond, if you will, in New York City. It's always going to be part of me and hopefully I'm part of it, you know, too. But, you know, it's also just, you know, California's kind of a thing right now, and who knows? I might not live. Like for me, California might not be the end. It might be like New Mexico or something. But New York was, you know, it's always going to be a part. So yeah, but it was really great seeing all those people. And then, you know, yesterday I got to go to Nacho's new place, Super Bueno.
Which it is Super Bueno.
So awesome.
Really dig that spot.
Really, really wonderful people working there. And
did you try the Sopa del Dia? Which means soup of the day.
Yeah. So
News you can use here on this show.
Yeah.
But it's not soup. It's a drink. It's on the drink menu. Did you try it?
Yeah.
It blew me away. The first time I've only had it two times, but the first time I had it, I was so blown away. For the listener, it's a beer set. So it's a Monopolio beer dressed with their house-made hot sauce.
Right.
It comes on a little wooden tray sort of thing with a copita of tricia, right?
Yeah.
Or is it sotol?
I think it's sotol.
Sotol.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Monopolio, house-dressed hot sauce, sotol, and then a little what you would expect to be your sangrita is in a little shot glass, and it's the liquid from their birria tacos, and it's hot.
Ooh,
I think that's the key.
Yeah.
That it's hot. So you've got this little set that's familiar but unfamiliar and savory and hot, and it fucking blew me
away. Especially,
my mouth is watering right now.
I know.
At all the pizza at Roberta's. But
yeah. Well, it was great. It was perfect timing too my wife was telling me, she was like, why do we always go to New York like in the dead of winter? So it was actually really perfect yesterday when I was there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the warmth of that and just everything.
Was Nacho there?
Yeah, I got to see Nacho. Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. I was lucky that I caught him because he was like kind of in and out. And I'm really happy that we got to do that. And, you know, my plan for today is later on, I want to go to Katana Kit and see Masa, another one of the greatest hospitality people, you know. And
yeah, a militant hospitalitarian. This man will force you to have fun.
Yeah. I wonder how many different kind of hats he's going to wear. How many costume changes.
Yes. It's like going to a Beyonce show.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush, green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills, combined with the freshest milk available, created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson.
And this is an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup, the critically acclaimed award-winning syrup that helps gringo bartenders better make margaritas, Negronis,
Lou, hold and up, hold up, wait.
Old
are you just
fashions?
This is how you start your podcast.
What?
It's not an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Well, of course it is. I'm just cutting costs by not paying writers to make something new. I'm just using an old script.
You pay writers?
That's some kind of jab?
No, I'm just saying
What are you saying?
Well, look, we've got this amazing syrup that's made in an ancestral manner, cooked down from the sap of the agave, harvested the way these families would to make pulque. It's a quality product. It deserves a quality presentation.
Yeah, okay, hang on. Ancestral agave syrup is made by real families following traditional methods. Unlike the industrial Blue Weber syrup you get everywhere else, Ancestral is cooked down from agua miel harvested from Salmiana in Hidalgo, Mexico. It is the grade A Vermont maple to the sticky diner syrup you've been using for your cocktails. Ingredients matter, both in how your cocktail tastes and how you treat the earth. Ancestral is better for both. Is that good?
Sure. Or maybe confusing instead of cheesy. Look, just visit ancestralagave.com to learn more and to order your world-class agave syrup today.
And we'll call that a wrap. Catch you next ad, Greg.
Hasta pronto?
Ancestral agave syrup. Available online at ancestralagave.org and wherever Greg and Lou are able to coerce store owners into carrying it.
Well, I guess we should address the small elephant in the room. It's just the three of us in the studio. We're live for the first time since March 2020. We did have a guest scheduled, and we're hopeful that they show up before the show is over. But we had to get started without. There were train delays, et cetera. It's New York City. Who knows what's going on? But I just wanted to throw that out there so that the listener can stop anticipating our terrible
Again,
segue.
Again, the magic.
let's bring in our guest today, Mr. Damon Bolte.
Yeah, there we go.
In town from Perfect. California.
Love it.
Well, it's a real pleasure being here at Roberta's because, you know, I've been doing this show now for almost, it's going to be like 14 years.
We just crossed the 13 mark, so yeah, we're headed towards 14.
But it's just it's one of the coolest spaces. If for any of the listeners out there I haven't been to Roberta's, you really got to come in here. It's a little bit of a trek if you're staying in the city, but it's not
worth
really
it.
That far. It's worth it. Some the best pizza and the best Caesar salad. I want to say probably the best Caesar salad in New York City, and that means a lot for the rest of the world too. But, you know, we've been doing this radio show for a long time. And as we mentioned before, you know, with our guests and the idea of this show was to essentially bottle the conversation, the kind of shop talk.
Right.
But, you know, have it live on air with people in the industry. So, you know, just looking around the studio and looking at our bar in here, I kind of wanted to call some of these guests and products out that have been on the show for, you know, in the past, because it really is kind of like we, you know, we archive all the shows, obviously, on heritageradionetwork.org, and you can go to Spotify and Stitcher and many other,
We're on all platforms.
All platforms.
Terrestrial and satellite.
But yeah, exactly. Mm. But you know, there's, when we started asking guests to come on from, you know, it ranges from like authors and bartenders and bar owners and managers and whatnot, but
doorman, cocktail servers, we've had them all.
Everybody.
And I love that it's exactly what you just said. It's I think the listener gets a fly on the wall opportunity to listen in on a after hours conversation. Since it's not after hours, it's noon, conversation, you know, among people in the industry, which is us and our guests.
Well, so in one of those guests, and actually it was our last trip right before COVID shut us down. We got to go down to Oaxaca with Bonnez Mezcal. Mm-hmm. And you were just talking about the sotadilla, you know, in like having like a copita, although it's a toll. This trip for me has been, and you know, there's a lot of agave and obviously in California, where I live now, but there's something about drinking mezcal in New York City that just feels like invigorating in a different way.
Sure.
And maybe some of that is like sense memory for me and us going on that. Greg wasn't on that trip. It was just me and you, Souther. But it was one of those things that like, drinking mezcal typically it's associated with like warm weather, right? And like you're in Mexico, you're in Oaxaca, right? Mm-hmm. But there's something really pleasing to me about drinking mezcal in the wintertime in New York City.
Sunshine in a glass.
It's kind of like escapism, right?
Yeah, of course.
And you know, we definitely need sometimes we definitely need some escapism, especially in the winter.
I mean, they made a movie about escaping New York.
Yeah.
Worked out pretty well for that guy, didn't
it? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, so what are, Greg, I mean, like you, so we just to let the listeners know, we did find, serendipitously, we had three mini bottles of Fernet in the cabinet here, which we took before the show.
Had is the key word. Yes. We had them.
But, we still have the mini bottles.
Yes.
Yeah, well, the bottles are still here. and they'll probably be here for another 4 years until the next
summer. Put them back as a relic.
But Greg, what's your go-to these days?
What occupies the heaviest rotation on your home bar shelf?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, I do a lot of mezcal. I've been definitely moving the direction of just kind of drinking shit neat. Like that's kind of my whole thing. It's like, I found out that my local liquor store stocks Schlatterer's Kirschwasser. So like, that's been a real big hit recently. Yeah, man. Yeah.
I love schnapps. Like it's a very specific type of drinking experience, right? Grappa and schnapps. And it's very, very good in the wintertime for sure.
Exactly. And it's wildly underrated. It's one of those things where it's like, this has, you know, it's just weird, the things that like we historically have selected to be like, this is important. And then there's all this other stuff that's over here. Yeah. And a lot of the stuff that usually gets lumped into like the other stuff category is stuff that is not made in Europe, that is not historically made by white people, that is kind of like, you know, oh yeah. And then there's this thing over here. I mean, that's shit. That's what happened with vodka up until honestly about 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like people looked at vodka as this thing where it's like, oh yeah, they do, those weirdos over in Eastern Europe do that, but like we don't drink that here, which is wild to think about now that it's completely eaten the world of spirits, but here we are. But it is kind of bonkers to me that like Kirschwasser, which is delightful and wonderful, and I wonder if maybe it doesn't occupy the same spot in our sort of consciousness because it doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't have the same like mixing capability as some other spirits perhaps, but because it is very, you know, you can taste the cherry and I feel like the cherry would come through, but also like with the gin, you can taste the botanical, like you can taste the juniper when that comes through. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I will say I actually have been on a bit of a cocktail making binge, which is weird for me because I stumbled across the list of that Punch published recently of like forgotten classics that you should definitely know. So like the Moonraker's on there from Shannon Tabay, who's a friend of the show. Mm-hmm. I've been vibing on this one called the Cloister, gin, yellow chartreuse, grapefruit juice, and lemon juice. Right. And it feels like it should be from the Gilded Age. It's actually from the 1970 Playboy host and bar book. So it's a wonderful little drink. The and just such a, yeah, just such a weird, fun little thing to play around with.
I took a flask.
Sounds like of a wacky Hemingway.
Yeah. I took a flask of chartreuse up to the Cloister. I went there once, further up in Manhattan.
Oh, the Met Cloisters. Yeah.
Yeah, so I went there and I
beautiful.
I snuck in a bottle of chartreuse just because I was like, I have to kind of have a cloister at Cloisters.
You feel like you're out of New York City when you're at the Cloister, and you're definitely still in New York City. Like totally. The views up there, the vistas, the Cloisters itself, I don't know, it's really gorgeous.
So what about another, like, okay, so, like, so some old cocktails that come to mind with when it comes to Kirschwasser. There's one that comes to mind right now for me that could go either way, and it's kind of debatable, but like Remember the Maine, right? So some people will make it with Cherry Hearing and other people have made it with like Kirschwasser. I personally like it more with Kirschwasser.
It's drier.
Yeah. But like, you know, if you're talking to like Greg Baum from Cocktail Kingdom, you know, he's a huge collector of like vintage Cherry Hearing. So he might, you know, go the other direction. Have you messed around with Kirsch and that?
No, I have not. But now I'm curious because I teach this is one other thing I've been doing since the last time we're in here is I've been teaching a lot of Zoom classes. And one of them I do is kind of, you know, whiskey through the ages. So I wanted to start with, it's a cocktail class. So I wanted to start with a Scotch cocktail, but there really aren't any. And I didn't want to start with the penicillin because, you know, it wouldn't have made sense with the chronology because I'm kind of talking about like whiskey's origins. And here's a drink that was invented less than 20 years ago.
Right.
So I kind of wound up on the Blood and Sand just by default, sort of. Yeah,
yeah.
I know. But I've been, it travels a different path through life than I do. That's what I'll say. But I haven't tried it with Kirschwasser instead of Cherry Hearing. And that
I
has
tried
me
a little it once before.
That might help. But, you know, the inherent issue with that drink is the orange, right? We're always going to stumble over that. So the fix for that is acid adjust your blood orange juice.
Right.
And then you can really get a little bit more traction. We were doing that at Booker and Dax back in the day, which helps the drink a ton, but it still doesn't really bring it home, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think it's a square peg round hole situation where it's a drink that's on the books. So we kind of have to like acknowledge it and deal with it, but I don't think it's ever going to make a name for itself. You know, the story is that it was named after a movie, about a bullfighter, blood in the sand, right?
Yeah, well, allegedly made for, I found one origin story that was like, this drink was made for the premiere of this movie that came out in 19, I think it was 25. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like, anyone who's listening to this show is probably thinking, 1925, why does it seem like that would be a bad year to do a cocktail party.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess
halfway through Prohibition.
Like, yeah. But that's the thing is like, it's a great name. And yeah. I think that's kind of the reason why.
Is it though? Around. Is it? Because okay.
Blood and come on, dog.
Blood and that dirt.
Blood and Dirt would be an interesting, if I ever do a riff on it, I'm going to call it that.
Yeah, we're going to call it Dirt in the Wound.
I was semi-famously quoted in Bon Appetit magazine many years ago by Andrew Knowlton. And I was at some cocktail party, I think it was like Astor Center or something like that. And he was interviewing people and he was like, Damon, so what do you think, what are your cocktail predictions for like, it was 2009 or something.
Sure.
I was like, I had a few drinks. I was like, I think mud cocktails. You know, cocktails made with mud, you know, and they fucking printed it.
Right.
And so like, anytime I think about like, cause he and I used to joke around about the blooded sandwich being like, that doesn't really, it's a cool name for something. Maybe not something you're going to drink. I don't know. But anyway, I actually made one for him, probably around that time. But I was going down to Court Street Grocers down on Court Street. This is back when I was at Primies. And they had all these like kind of vintage sodas, mm-hmm. you know, like, like stuff that like glass bottles, screen printed labels, sure. you know, like old, like Big Reds and RC's.
Cheer
and
wine. Like, or
cheer wine. Yeah. Yeah, they had that there. And so I made one. Yeah. I made one with like an old like orange soda. And it was actually... It was like a highball.
To be honest, I could see that being better than the original.
Than the original, yeah. It actually worked.
This can bring some sharpness and some like the bubbles you need to be cleansing. See. Yeah, the cocktail itself as written is just too flabby.
Yeah. Like it's so what about you, Souther? What are you working on these days? Or like, what are you drinking, enjoying these days?
Man, you know, it's no secret. I think that I'm a big drinker of American whiskeys. But I think, and I don't think this is a secret either. But I think just people don't know this about me. I've been drinking like. More like cognacs and brandies. I got a hold of a limited release from our friends down at High Wire Distilling. They've been on the show. And they released a peach brandy, which is the first peach, like actual peach brandy, not peach flavored, peaches made, right? The first peach brandy to be produced in America in like 100 years.
Really?
And it was dry and fruity without being cloying and sweet. It was so delicious. Yeah, I got myself. I grabbed two bottles. Had a buddy down there ship them up to me, surely legally.
of course.
Yeah, let him off the hook. But I got two bottles. I got one for my head bartender Bruce. That was over Christmas, so we enjoyed those. And I drink some cognac, and I drink a lot of apple brandy. And I don't know. I think my taste is turning towards brandy, fruit yeah. distillates more than grain distillates these days. But yeah. Everything comes and goes, ebbs and flows.
I'm right there. You know, it's kind of
interesting. And you've been working in brandy for the past 3 years. Yeah, totally.
I mean, I've always been a big fan of brandy. And I think, like, you know, well, we're talking about cherry brandy, Kirschwasser, right? And then we're talking about the peach brandy and, like, grape brandies. Like, I've always been a huge apple brandy fan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Of course. Especially around here, you know.
Yeah.
There's something really nice about... what's happening in the world of brandy right now, which is so it's strange to me that it's taken so long for people to start getting turned back onto brandy. I mean, brandy makes sense in New York City for sure. I mean, there's always the brandy library. I mean, yeah. you know, and like Death and Company's always had like, several different brandies.
I mean, Laird's and Lisa Laird's impact on the industry in the past 15 years.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. And so it's interesting to see what's happening with brandy right now. And I'm sure in no way it's going to be as impactful as like the mid 2000s when like American whiskey was like blowing up. But the thing is when people start realizing your general consumers start realizing what just say like a cognac or an Armagnac is, it's distilled wine. So
right. You
say if you like wine, and you like whiskey, it's kind of like those things together, you
sure.
know, kind of, you know, but just going back to, you know, we're talking about some classic cocktails like Blood and Sand, you know, there's a world of brandy cocktails that is so important for the history of classic cocktails, you know, things like the sidecar and
the Cresta,
and the Cresta and like all that. But
stone fence.
But there's like, there's so much room for like modern mixology to like really like take the flag and like plant it, you know, and do something. You know, we've been lucky enough over the past, you know, couple decades to like, you know, have the, like you were talking about like Sotol, you know, on the that's what it did, like, you know, have like products kind of like come to the light for the first time for, I'm air quoting, yes, for, you know, most general consumers, right? And but to have something like brandy that's been around literally longer than any other thing, and strangely enough, like not too many people are working with it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just right there. It's right in front of you.
I think, you know, well, as was famously said about brandy, you're a fine girl.
Fine girl.
What a good wife you would be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my life, my love, and my lady
is the sea.
Is the sea.
Yes.
You know, I think there were years that went by where you were talking about predictions with Andrew Knowlton, which, by the way, I haven't even thought about that kind of, wow, where did he come
from? He moved to Austin and he opened up a couple of restaurants.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
But you know, there was those years that went by where it was like, everybody make your prediction for next year. And everybody's prediction was rum and sherry, rum and sherry, rum and sherry. And
yeah,
2024 is the year of sherry. I can feel it.
Neither of them ever took off. I feel it's kind of like we're in that sort of spot with brandy, too. It's like it's
brandy and sherry go really well together.
It's primed for the pump. It's just not taken off. And I think, I don't want to get too like deeply philosophical here, but you know, I was a butcher for a long time, and I'll tie this back together. Hang on.
Where's he going?
Well, what happens is everybody wants prime rib and tenderloin. You know, they want the ribeye and the tenderloin. But there's a whole cow here we have to deal with.
Yeah.
Everybody just wants the quote unquote best. And I think that when we get to
a tartar guy myself, so.
Well, so we can use up a lot of stuff for you. But when we get to that place where we're only seeking out and using quote unquote the best pieces, right, then we're neglecting all these other pieces that are equally delicious and wonderful. And I think maybe, you know, in that analogy, maybe the hamburger is really taking off now. You know, George Motz has his American burger thing going on, and you know, it's, you know, sparking interest in that, which you know is made from not the ribeye and the tenderloin. So we're using those other pieces. So we just got to figure out a way to create avenues for people to use these, in this analogy, off cuts in a more efficient and exciting way. I don't know if this analogy holds water, but like, I feel like we're always just like, I only want to consume the best of whatever this category is. And then a larger scope, as you say, then of the categories, what's the best category? So we're just going to consume that. That's why vodka is taking over, right? Because it's the cleanest. It's the, you know, it's the most usable in cocktails. It's the whatever.
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree. I just think that we kind of, this obsession of like, oh, what's going to be the next mezcal? Like, we've been talking about that for 10 years now. Yeah. And I think maybe it's just time that we as an industry acknowledge that like, there's just something unique about that. Like, maybe it wasn't the moment. Maybe it was just that spirit. Like, that spirit came along at exactly the right time.
Mm-hmm.
It was familiar enough to drinkers that they knew how to relate to it. I mean, like, you get my whole thing about mezcal has always been like, it took off because it's funky and weird enough to appeal to the freaks like us.
Mm.
But it's also, you can describe it in three easily relatable words to every single person who's added a cocktail before on the planet: tequila, but smoky. That's it.
Sure.
And
even
I
though
think
that's
that,
not necessarily true.
Yes. And obviously that's a gross oversimplification. Sure, sure, but if you say that to someone who like is like, oh, mezcal, what is that? And they're at a bar and it's Saturday night and you're six deep, you can say it's tequila but smoky. And they'll say, oh, that's cool, I'll have that.
Right.
Like, and then they've tried it and then they know that they like it or they don't. But most of the time,
saying,
they will.
Are you trying to maybe allude to the notion that maybe in this case work that we're working on right now, that maybe brandy doesn't have enough
I'm saying
brief
that,
words that we can attach to it that are exciting.
No, I'm saying that I think we need to acknowledge
it's whiskey,
that
there's made from fruit.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is there needs to be there
whiskey for wine drinkers. That's what I've always said.
I like.
Yeah,
it.
But then there's follow up questions to that. Then there's like, oh, really? In like what way? Like there are no follow up questions to it's tequila but smoky. People
right.
Like that is the end of the conversation. And I think maybe we just have to acknowledge that there isn't going to be an ex-mezcal. That mezcal took off in that moment because of what it is and what that moment was. But also I think there's kind of an opportunity now. I mean, all of the data points to the fact that we're gonna get, this is also the weird thing about live radio is where I haven't been in this monkey enclosure for a while with people looking in at us and just being like, hey man, hi.
Yeah.
There was a table waving at us. God bless the folks at table 42 who just left, who were eating their pizza with a knife and fork. They were wildly entertaining. But
I didn't think we were ever going to get on air with them sitting there pizza that way.
we were fascinated for 5 minutes just watching. And it was one of these great welcome to the monkey house moments of who's watching who. Just a real panopticon thing with our little airplane bottles of Fernet Branca. Yeah.
Tell me you're not from New York without telling me you're not from New York.
Yeah, right.
You're going to eat your Roberta's pizza with a fork and knife.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if you caught the visible shock on their face when they first looked at the bill. And I was like, yeah, if we weren't sure that you're in from out of town, now we know.
Puzzled.
All right. Come to New York. New Yorkers are super friendly. Anyone who's not listening here, we're not all snobs, I promise.
We didn't say this to their face.
Well, we kind of did, but behind a relatively soundproof piece of glass here.
Yeah, they couldn't
hear that. That's the sound of courtesy,
that's the barrier,
folks. But I think that we are kind of in a moment now where, I mean, all the data is showing that people are drinking less, and that's having a huge effect on, I mean, I'm was just doing a little research about the effect that that's having on beer right now, and I think that that could potentially drive something that's not going to be the sort of gushing oil well that Mezcal was, but it is an opportunity to drive interest in these spirits that maybe have taken a back seat for a while, that are maybe a little bit more esoteric, stuff like Calvados, which I think is one of the best things that human beings make with our hands. It's fucking incredible. And it is wildly underrated, probably because it's hard to get your hands on and expensive. But I think that if people are prioritizing the experience, quality over quantity, then we can see a rise in some of these.
I think you're right. That actually makes a ton of sense to me. If people are gonna drink less, they're gonna want to drink better.
Right. This all happened in 2008 when the market crashed and everything. And that was coincided with the whole growth of American whiskey. But when you look at the actual numbers, if you look like Nielsen reports and things like that, what's happening right now is people, sure, they're drinking less just the number, the figures of what the dollars are, right? Mm-hmm. But they're actually drinking more spirits than and less wine these days because people are starting to realize, and this is kind of like,
is that a bang for your buck situation?
It is to a certain degree, because I've been working in spirits marketing for the last 3.5 years on brandy and California brandy or American brandy. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, when you put that, you're talking about the same liquid amount in the bottle, 750 milliliters, right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of hold like fine wines on this this certain pedestal, and then the spirit. But when you think about 4 glasses of wine versus 12 to 15 pours of brandy or whiskey, or it really starts to make sense there. Mm-hmm. I'm really digging the fact that, I think as far as the market share goes for spirits, it does seem like American whiskey has been slowing a little bit, but I think it's because of the saturation of what's happening.
I'm in the market. Saturated.
Yeah. But there are just more brands out there, and people are realizing it's fucking ridiculous to pay what people are charging for a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle, and that's been going on for years, but some things that we're kind of starting to see just on the metrics alone is that there are just so many more new distilleries that are actually at the age now where they have product, they have the juice that's been in barrels long enough to not be super fresh and green on the whiskey side. Mm-hmm. That's been the problem. There's been a lot of pushback and a lot of shit talking for newer whiskey distilleries in the United States. They just there's two parts of it, really. It's the fact that they're green, they're young, they're not mature enough, right? But then also, any one of them could just be buying juice from MGP.
Right.
Or
any one GDI, of them, and most of all of them.
And most of all, yeah. So
anyone and most of all.
And I think that's leading consumers to kind of check out different spirits. Like that's kind of what happened with Mezcal, honestly. But going to brandy, it's wait a minute. This is legitimately like decades old, and it's actually, or sometimes even older than that, like Calvados, or like you said Calvados, but like Armagnac. Cool thing about Armagnac, it's that really is the whiskey of the brandy world, you know?
Right.
It's like, so like I found there's a lot of like crossover from like whiskey drinkers over to brandy with Armagnac in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Some of the newer ones to me that I'm just, like, I think the takeaway from this is like, we're really into fruit brandies right now, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, I love
Pear Williams. First. This is going to be the summer of fruit brandy.
Yeah. Let's go. Pear Williams, Eau de Vie. Oh my God. It's like, geez, it's like, that's some of the best things I've ever put in my mouth. You know, like,
let's get that in the blender and whip up some summer drinks.
Yeah. And, you know, there's also, you know, you mentioned Slaughter and Kirschwasser. They make a really great Pear Williams as well.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that's the way to go. There's also, like, there's one that's, to me, where we're talking about apple brandy, we're talking about pear brandy now. Obstler. Do you know what Obstler is? It's basically, it's a mix of apple and pear eau de vie. And that, to me, like, in a highball is just, it's transcendent of seasons. You know, it doesn't have to be pigeonholed to one.
Apple and pear. Apple and pear.
Yeah.
Obstler. All right. I'll look it up.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned, now that we've talked about a bunch of fruit brandy, let's back up to what you mentioned earlier, because I wanted to get some more information about it, because I feel like I have my finger on the pulse pretty much of this industry, but I didn't hear about this at all. It's Manhattan Week.
Right.
This was news to me. The guy who's in from the other side of the continent informed both of us who live here that it's Manhattan
who live
week.
In or around Manhattan.
Yes. Yes. Look, it's always something week or agreed. Something day.
Agreed. Right? Agreed. We all know that. But so, yeah, talk to us a little bit about your experience with Dale Gruff, King Cocktail, and Manhattan Week.
So, okay, yes. Did
either of you or both of you bring guitars and play music together again?
We talked about
like you've once done here at Roberta's Pizza.
I think we did it twice, actually. I just have the one photo.
Live on the air. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Manhattan Week. So, really what's going on here is like, you know, we have Negroni Week and things like that. But, I mean, we're in Manhattan or we're in New York City. So, we should definitely have a Manhattan Week. Mm-hmm. I've actually thought about this for years now, and then finally
you've been noodling around with maybe writing something down about it,
right? Yeah, I messed around with writing a Manhattan book, but Philip Green, who was there Monday, he was sitting with Dale. He wrote a book about the Manhattan cocktail. They were two of the three presenters along with Amanda Schuster. Now what happened here was, you know, they got up and they talked about like kind of Manhattan cocktail history. And then, you know, obviously there was a lot of, you know, industry folks and enthusiasts there to celebrate the beginning of Manhattan Week. It's just one of those things that should have existed long ago. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's been in this industry long enough, they remember like the Manhattan Cocktail Classic, which was the
MCC.
One of the greatest. I mean, like, it was held at the New York Public Library.
It was so fun.
And it was kind of like the Met Gala for cocktails, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, there was, you know, that was the last time I had a finger.
Just as expensive, but less fancy dresses.
Yeah,
exactly. No, it wasn't that
expensive. But yeah, it was a black tie kind of gala, and you know, it was celebrating not necessarily just the Manhattan cocktail, but cocktails in Manhattan.
Yes,
right. And I often thought that like there needed to be something like this. So that's what's going on this week. So there are a lot of, it's kind of like, you know, restaurant week kind of
anybody
things,
cleaning,
you know,
it, like, anybody spearheading it, you know, and the Negroni Week is Campari. Is there anybody like this
was,
this
was held by, De Groff's, aperitivo. He was making what he called the Midnight Manhattan, mm-hmm. It was Angel's Envy, was the whiskey sponsor. And then he was using his Amaro, really simply those two ingredients.
Yeah.
Kind of like the guys, like, you know, kind of like a black Manhattan minus the bitter. So, you know, and it was a really awesome event to go to, because I got to run into people from all over the city that I hadn't seen in a while. Lincoln Chinnery comes to mind. Awesome
Lincoln,
dude.
Lincoln Wrights.
Yeah. And, you know, my buddy Mike from Travel Bar, and just tons of
awesome.
He
and I are simpatico in a lot of ways. Very grumpy fellows.
You're grumpy and you like whiskey.
I'm tempted to reach out to him and get him to let me have Wednesday night shift there. because currently the bar is only open Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And I was like, I'll come in and open Wednesday and just be angry at people.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, I'll carry on the brand. I can do it.
He's like, I don't got enough staff. I'm like,
good culture fit. I think that's what they call it on LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah. Totally. That'd be amazing. And you'd be back in the old hood.
Yeah, right.
You know, you haven't done that since Prime Meats days.
Just down the street.
Or, John Barleycorn. John Barleycorn.
I worked at both.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
I got my share of ponytail lashings from Fu. Karen Fu would be on the bar, and she would have her hair in a ponytail, and she would move so fast that thing would whip around, and just anyone who was behind the bar with her would walk away with whip scars.
I miss that.
Yeah, she's great.
Well, anyway,
younger days, Dave. Yeah, younger days.
Totally. Well, for anyone who's listening out there live this week, check out a lot of bars basically they're doing like Manhattan menus for Manhattan Week.
I'm happy to get on board because it gets, you know, gets your audience engaged and whatever. I wish I didn't own, you know, and Maury Margo, we claim to only make three drinks and the Manhattan is one of them. So I'm happy to spread the word, even though I didn't know about it. So I'm glad you went. I was invited, but I was away in Belize. Don't feel bad for me.
Yeah. You better believe it.
It was unbelievable.
Well, okay. So before we wrap up here,
we need to get some food in us to chase down all this whiskey. Yes. Good God.
I do want to say this though. It was kind of serendipitous timing for me and my wife to be here because the Manhattan cocktail, and I know I've said this a bunch of times, I'm sure, but it was great to be able to have this conversation with Dale and Philip Green and Amanda Schuster. Because the Manhattan cocktail is what made me become a bartender and move to New York City.
Oh.
Okay, let's hear this story.
Oh, so, well, yeah, I started collecting cocktail books when I was 12 years old.
Yes, I know.
And I was hanging out, I owned a motorcycle and scooter shop in Oklahoma City, and I was working in a guitar shop, and then my band was playing. I did everything in my life. I was a graphic designer. Everything that I had as a hobby, so I thought I'd worked in professionally. And I sell my business and my band's on tour and I'm just hanging out at my friend's bar. It was called Electro Lounge. It was the only like cocktail bar at the time in Oklahoma City. And so my buddy Brian Neal, the owner, he was the first person to ever make me a proper martini, you know, stirred with orange bitters. This would have been early 2000s. So in Oklahoma City, that was a real rarity, but he made me a Manhattan one day and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking like, what the hell am I going to do with the rest of my life? I bought my house when I was 19, like I professionally like was really advanced and all this stuff.
I was a late bloomer. Damon was a very early bloomer.
Yeah. The industry called to me and I was like, you know what? The only, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking like, what the hell am I going to do with the rest of my life? I was in my early 20s and I was like,
what am I going to do with the next 60 plus
years? I was thinking about that too, but I didn't own a house. I think I was exceptionally proud of myself because I had
the house was in New York City.
The house ownership, the business ownership in his early 20s.
Yeah, I graduated high school and art school ahead of time and all. It was kind of a crazy thing. I just wanted to be an adult.
Yeah.
I was already drinking in bars at 18, 19.
And it's crazy because now you don't act like one at all.
Well, the age is finally catching up with me. I used to think I was cool for getting away from drinking, and you know, at a very young age. But proper drinks, you know. Anyway, so I order a Manhattan. He makes it for me. And it's sitting there and I'm just thinking like, I'm talking to him a little bit. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with the rest of my life? And the answer was literally right under my nose. Manhattan cocktail. It's like, I've been studying cocktail books for like a decade and making cocktails at home for myself. Like I know a lot about cocktails, although I never worked in the industry. And you learn a lot more from working than you would just from reading.
Sure.
But anyway, the answer was right under my nose, the Manhattan cocktail. And so I got into the industry. I was a waiter for 2 weeks. Then I was the bartender. And then 2 weeks later, I was the bar manager. So a month in, and he told me, he was like, you've never worked in the service industry before. Because I asked him if he would train me to bartend at his bar. And I was like, yeah, but I think I know what I'm doing, man. And he was like, well, if you go get a job somewhere else, for 6 months. If you last 6 months in the industry, then I'll train you. So he shows up to the bar a month later and I'm the bar manager. And he's like, what the fuck is going on here? And
That's like, kind of my question, honestly, yeah, hearing this story.
Yeah. And he was like, all right, come by on Tuesday. We'll start. The Manhattan Cocktail. So when we talked at the top of the show about running into Del DeGroff and Philip Green at Keen's Steakhouse, the magic of New York City, that's what happened. That's what got me here. And, you know, it's just been constantly growing since then. But, like, yeah, that's what I did. And the fucked up thing is when I got to New York City, it took me a really long time to find a bar job because I didn't have
2 years New York City experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fucking bullshit. Yeah. So, I learned a lot from my own experience. And I've taken a lot of chances on people who had no experience in the industry.
Yeah.
Henry O.
Yes. Oh, my God.
He's only worked in one bar. He started as a bar back at Grand Army.
Yep.
Two nights a week. And immediately I was like, you've got to be a bartender. You've got this in you. And he's to this day one of my favorite bartenders. He's never worked at another bar. He doesn't work there anymore. But, you know, that's one of those things.
Henry O, my experience with Henry O, of course, at your bar, but before your bar, Henry O was a longtime regular at Margo.
I think I met him there.
Henry O still it'll never be beaten because we don't serve him anymore. We serve scotch eggs at Amore Margo, you know, so it's a hard boiled egg that's wrapped in sausage and then deep fried. We're a vegan company now, so we can't do that. But you know, when you do that to an egg, it comes out kind of the size of like almost a tennis ball, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's bigger than an egg for sure. He holds the record for the most of those eaten in any one evening. He sat there and had several drinks with us and ate 7 scotch eggs over the course of the evening. That's like eating a meatloaf.
Yeah.
Yourself.
I know. Yeah. 7 doesn't sound like a lot, but like the size of these.
Eat again, 7 eggs.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Eat
and
7
then
eggs.
Wrap them in sausage.
Yes. And then chase that them. Down with an entire pack of sausage.
Yeah. And do this while drinking nothing but all spirit cocktails at Amore Margo.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's the performance enhancing drug in this equation.
Now, right, so okay, we're definitely getting lunch.
Settling your stomach as you go.
It's time for lunch, guys.
It's been really great catching up.
And I love that we just got to do this show together, just the three of us today.
I wish our guests could have made it. I still haven't heard from them. I'm a little bit worried. This is a person we all know and love, and I'm for them to not be answering at all for calls and texts. The worry is starting to brew up. I thought they'd walk in halfway through, and they have not. So
no, we'll keep
everything's all right.
In business.
We'll keep you informed.
Well, anyway, that's the magic of New York, right?
Yes, it is.
And that's what this show's been about today.
That's right.
So, everyone out there, start drinking fruit brandy. Don't be an idiot about it. Like, understand the greatness of what it is. But also, you know, definitely grab yourself a Manhattan this week and any other week, really, for that matter.
You can make a Manhattan with a fruit brandy.
You can, absolutely.
Let's make an apple brandy Manhattan. Let's go.
Yeah. Isn't it called Jersey City?
With Dale DeGroff tomorrow.
That's what we're going to have at the bar right now.
All right.
Let's do it. I know they got it here. So, yeah, let's do it. Awesome, guys. So it's been really amazing getting to, like, actually be in the studio for the first time in, like, almost 5 years for me.
Incredible.
With you guys. And I'm so glad to be here at Roberto's. And we are definitely going to, like, enjoy some pizza and salads and stuff. Everyone out there, you know, thanks for listening to the show. I'm so glad that we're just back. You know, like, we've been doing this remotely for so many years now, and just being here feels great, you know. And
it does. I want to mention one before we go away. You know, even coming back this time, the experience of watching our little shipping container out back of Roberta's Pizza become this sort of, like, I jokingly said earlier, it's like a tumor now. It's in the middle. Roberta's has grown around us. They've grown on top of us, the shipping container that is Heritage Radio Network is now in the center of Roberta's Pizza.
I know.
And the whole Blanca, you know, empire kind of thing going on here. And to see the people bustling through the window as we do the show and waving at us and talking to us or you know, trying to talk to us. it brings a level of excitement that I miss.
I kind of forgot about it. Like, just that element, you know, like
the fishbowl.
Yeah.
And as Greg said, like, who's looking at who? We're looking at them. They're looking at us. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I'm glad we got to do this show. I'm so glad you're back in town. I wish you could come back every week, but
I'll start making it more of a regular thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, the pandemic got in everybody's way, and
that old thing.
But yeah, it's been great being in the studio with you guys. And thank you to Armin, our producer.
I have a nice buzz. We didn't mention it very much. We've clipped through about a half a bottle of 100 proof whiskey. We had some Fernet Minis to start. I'm feeling good. Let's have some lunch.
Yeah. Let's do it. And yeah, like I said before, thanks to Armin, our producer today, who's been really kicking ass for us for a long time now, you know, handling all of our remote recording.
All the logistics and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm sure it's a lot tougher on him when we're running around all over the country rather than just being here in the room.
Yeah, yeah. And so we're thankful for him to be here today with us in the studio. So, yeah, that's it for the speakeasy this week. Go get yourself a Manhattan. Make it with some brandy. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station. Keep us going. And until next week.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Actually, cheers.
An actual cheers in person. Yep. So you don't
shun the devil with your right. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.